am talking today with Janet Varney, who is about to start a show on IFC called Stand Versus Evil. Is that right?
Stand Against Evil. Kind of like Stand Against Evil, but instead it's Stand.
Right. And who also was on my favorite show, You're the Worst.
Yay!
And, of course, was the voice of Korra on Legend of Korra. And I wanted to start off asking about Stand Against Evil, because I didn't know about it until I started doing research, and now I'm super excited about it.
Oh, good! Well, listen, it's created and written by Dana Gould, who is one of my all-time favorite stand-up comedians and was also a writer on The Simpsons for many, many years. So that vibe is 100% my cup of tea, and I think it will be for comedy and horror fans. I think it will be for people who just like scary stuff. They won't be able to resist what's funny about it because it's also like great and scary and sort of that classic. We have a lot of kind of practical effects rather than those kind of effects that you see in horror movies where you're like, oh, this just seems like it's computer generated. Dana is a huge lover of kind of classic horror. And so he wanted to bring that sensibility to the show. And then also just the surreal hilarity of The Simpsons. I think one time he described the show to me as like, if Agent Scully had to work with Archie Bunker, which I think is probably a pretty good characterization of it. It stars John C. McGinley and me as kind of partners battling these evil forces in this small town in New Hampshire, and also stars Deborah Baker Jr. and Nate Mooney as John's daughter and my deputy, respectively. It was just a blast to work on, and I'm so excited for it to premiere. I saw a complete episode a couple of days ago, and, you know, when you work on something, sometimes you work on stuff that maybe you aren't as you don't necessarily know if you would be as crazy about as a viewer, but because, and I've been very lucky because in the past like 5 or 6 years, I haven't really done anything that I felt that way about. But particularly when you're getting started in this business, you know, you want to work. I think that's true for, you know, anybody creative who has the enthusiasm for a certain line of work. It's like when you get those opportunities, whether or not you're a huge fan of something like, well, you know, I'm not that into pro wrestling, but I really want to, you know, be in a thing. So I'm going to pretend to be a pro wrestler or whatever. I wish that had been something that was presented to me, but you know, I've been really, really lucky because in the last few years, I've just had the great, great fortune to be asked to do things that I just love as a fan. So this is one of those. It's like I would watch this whether or not I had anything to do with it. And the fact that I do is just, you know, a tremendous honor. And that's how I feel about You're the Worst and, you know, Legend of Korra and you know, stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I've noticed it seems like you've been big into sort of a lot of things that I'm also a fan of, comic books and horror and that kind of thing. Can you talk a little about Korra? It's in the rearview a little bit now. So perspective on that as to what that meant to you and how you remember it?
Yeah, listen, what's great about Comic-Cons and about kind of perennial what I consider to be classics like The Legend of Korra or, for example, Firefly or Star Trek or, you know, any of those, the Star Wars franchise, any of those things that Doctor Who that are really beloved and that exist in that world of the kind of Comic-Cons that are now so ubiquitous that, you know, all the big cities have them and then, you know, small towns have them. And you get this totally different sense of the fans depending on what size you go to, right? If you go to San Francisco or if you go to San Diego Comic-Con, it's this enormous corporate undertaking. And that doesn't mean there's not a lot of great stuff there, but it's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And if you go to something smaller, which I also like to try to do, where you have, you know, a few thousand people, you really get the chance to interact with people more. And I think, you know, it sort of becomes quality over quantity. So they both have their place. And I love doing both in part because of, you know, what you were just mentioning, which is that I like that world. I like a lot of the stuff that people are celebrating in that world. I'm a total dork and a nerd, so I feel very at home there. And so it's kind of great because it's not really in the rear view for me in the sense that, you know, I just came back a couple weekends ago from the San Francisco Comic-Con. And so it's very alive for me because I have the real pleasure of getting to meet fans of the show and talk about the experience of working on it and talk about the kind of social impact that some of the things that happened on the show had for people, both personally and kind of on a broader scale. And so it's really a wonderful experience. I think that's why people like Alan Tudyk and Nathan Fillion love doing those cons as well, is that if you do a show that you have nothing but respect and love for, it never gets old kind of talking about it and celebrating it and feeling that sense of honor of just having been included in it, you know?
Yeah, and I know you did a HavenCon here in Austin.
Yeah, I love HavenCon. I've done it the only 2 years it's existed since it's a brand new con. I came back. I came for the first one. I came for the second one. And I'm happily come for the third one. I would think I jokingly said I would be their mascot if they wanted, because that's an example of, you know, the kind of organization that I really love seeing. I founded a comedy festival, so I know how hard it is to start something in its fledgling state. And I love small, independent enthusiasts who also put their mind to, you know, creating communities for like-minded people. And I'm a big supporter of LGBT plus causes. So that just seemed like a total no-brainer, that one. And I love, you know, I love Texas, actually. I love San Antonio. I love Austin, Houston, and Dallas. Dallas is great. Houston is the only place that I don't feel like I really got a sense of the actual city.
Yeah.
It felt more like it was a bunch of office buildings.
Yeah.
But
no, you may have gotten a sense of Houston.
Okay, good. Good to know.
No, I'm that's mean. I shouldn't say that about my Houston listeners, but no, I've done time in Houston. You mentioned the comedy fest that you started, SF Sketch Fest, which is, how long has that been going?
This upcoming January will mark our 16th year. It's so crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, we've really been at it a long time now. It's kind of stunning.
And you've done a lot of sketch comedy, not just there, but you've done it on TV as well. I've seen you on various sketch shows. What are some of the differences between doing it, say, live and on TV?
I mean, it's pretty different. It's sort of the same experience of doing anything on TV, which is that unless you're doing it in front of a live audience, you don't have that electric kind of energy and feedback that makes performing in front of a live crowd so fun. And you have, you know, numerous opportunities to kind of approach the material different ways. I love both. You know, I wouldn't want to give up either, and which is also kind of how I feel about voiceover versus doing on-camera stuff. They both are really wonderful and magical in their own ways. For some people, you know, one appeals more than the other. But I think at this point, I've made it pretty obvious that I like to do a lot of different stuff, and that I don't just have kind of, well, I'm the go-to for this one thing, and, you know, that's what I'm known for. And that has its benefits, and it's, I don't want to say it's deficits, but it definitely has, you know, sometimes it's nice when you are a person who's just like, oh, that person loves, you know, they only do comedy about dollhouses. So
right.
If you ever want somebody to, you know, and whereas if you're kind of all over the place, people are like, well, I want to, you know, okay, you do this, you do that. How does that all kind of fit together? And I think sometimes the answer is, well, it doesn't. It only fits together in my brain because it's all stuff that I'm excited about.
Well, yeah, I look at your IMDb and yeah, it's clear you're something of a Renaissance woman. You've done so much different stuff related to Cora and voiceover. I believe that when you guys recorded that, you did something a little different. Didn't you record with the other people more often than not?
Yeah, that's definitely rarer for, I think it's really rare for animated film, and it's pretty rare for animation on television as well. Nickelodeon really does try to do that with almost all of its shows, to my understanding, because they have a really great sense of, I think, the benefits to the energy and the storyline and the performances when you have all of these kind of wonderful personalities that are getting to act opposed, you know, against one another, with each other in the room. I think they started to see really early on that, you know, because they love comedians, and even for, you know, so much of their stuff is so big and goofy and silly and great. And I think they kind of caught on really early on as a network, which of course has been around for decades now, that there's something special about getting people into a room together, even if it doesn't result in, oh, all of this improvised stuff ended up getting used in the final product. It just keeps that energy very alive, and it's a very different experience than being in a booth by yourself, just having voices piped in over your earphones, or, you know, somebody reading with you. Even if it's the best person in the world who's reading the script with you, it's still not going to be exactly the same as having the actor who's portraying that voice. So I think they really try to cultivate that as much as they can within their various shows. And certainly Mike and Brian, who created Legend of Korra, felt that way. They really liked having people working together.
Well, listening to the commentary tracks on Korra, it really sounds like you guys had a relationship that came through in the show, especially when you're doing commentary tracks with David Faustino and some of those other guys. That fun and that sense of camaraderie came through in the show, I think.
Oh, good. Yeah, I think so too. And I'm surprised I say anything in the commentary because my memories of doing the seasons I was able to do, I feel like all I did was just sit there and listen to them with my mouth agape and my eyes wide because I'm such a fan of their process and their brains that I would forget that I was supposed to be saying anything interesting. So I would just be like, oh, nuh-uh, you guys, that's so cool. Like I was just acting as the audience member, basically.
I wanted to ask about Korra as far as like playing an icon. When did you realize that Korra was going to be sort of as important to not just the LGBT community, but a bunch of people? Like, that's a character that they love. When did you realize how important that character was?
Well, you know, I mean, that's definitely what the cons are all about for me. I think when I first heard about Comic Cons and had a sense of them, you know, I what I didn't realize is that those cons are full of people with social anxiety. So just because you may not like being in a crowd, like at a mall or a concert, doesn't mean that you can't navigate your way through a Comic Con because it's full of like-minded people who are all like, I don't like people, but I like these people. So I kind of avoided those situations because I just thought, oh, it's going to be so overwhelming. There's going to be so many people there. And I don't know how I feel about, you know, kind of being in this sea of people. What if I freak out and have to run away? It was not an experience I had really had as a fan. And so when I started going to them, because I was getting invited to attend them as, you know, as a performer, as a special guest or whatever, that's kind of when I really realized the impact on a personal level the show had. I had started to get some fan mail and stuff, but until you are sitting across from somebody who is, you know, able to tell you in person what the show has meant, I think that's a really special privilege, honestly, that people who enjoy doing those kinds of appearances really benefit from. And it's not about, I really, truly, I don't feel like I'm going there for everyone to tell me how great I am. It's just not about that.
Yeah.
I didn't create the show. I didn't write the show. I didn't animate it. I just had the total and complete honor of being that voice. But to me, that's peanuts compared to what, you know, what it takes to get a show like that off the ground and to touch so many people. So I think of myself as an ambassador of the show. I don't think of myself as like, oh my gosh, it was great. So many people told me how great I was. To me, it's the conversations I'm having are, we're both going, wasn't it so special and great? And that, you know, when someone says, you know, I was able to come out to my parents through a conversation with my mom about this show, or, you know, I went through something physically and mentally traumatic, and seeing Korra go through, you know, some PTSD made me realize that it doesn't make me weak. It's something that makes me human. Those conversations, again, I can't take any credit for that at all. So I'm just happy to be there and kind of be a mouthpiece for the whole of the show. And, you know, and it's really humbling. It just makes me feel very lucky, but it's not about, you know, here's my glossy headshot, aren't I fabulous, you know?
I can't remember having seen you do superheroes before. Have you done a superhero voice before besides Korra, obviously?
Yeah, no. You know, I don't really live in that voiceover world full-time at all. So the voices that I've done, I typically have just done kind of fun, goofy guest star voices, or I've shot pilots that I've recorded pilots that haven't been picked up. And so, yeah, I'm trying to think of I definitely had never played a superhero. And in fact, it was the first big job I got. And it remains the biggest job I've had. Everything else that I've done has kind of been little bits here and there. I don't have some, you know, new iconic character that I'm voicing, in part because the women who do voices, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't hire Grey Delisle if she were available. But I also am not available that much because I do so much on-camera stuff. So, but, you know, that's what is so remarkable about Korra, is that if someone had said, if I had unlimited knowledge of every show in animation that had ever lived, mm-hmm. I would never pick anything over that one if I could only pick one, you know? There's no sense of like, oh yeah, it was great playing Korra, but like, I really want to be Wonder Woman. Listen, that would be great, but like, nothing will ever be better than Korra. There may be something that comes close, but nothing will ever supersede it, you know?
So that does lead me to my sort of fanish question of, if you could voice a superhero, say, you know, DC's got this new Justice League show coming up, and that's what made me think of it, is Justice League Unlimited had so many voice parts, like Nathan Fillion was in it, and Alan Tudyk, I believe, did, everybody did a voice. If you could do a superhero for a Marvel or a DC character, is there one that you'd like to do?
I mean, I think I've had people tweet me, so I'll quote them so I don't have to, like, say that I think that I'm the winner, but I think Captain Marvel is something that I've had more than one person say, God, I wish you were the voice of this character. And since Kelly Sue DeConnick gave her, threw her support into that, and she's written sort of the most, to me, the most pleasing Captain Marvel plot lines and stuff based on conversations I've had, especially with diehard fans of the character, that would be a great one.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Captain Marvel, and I'm liking the new stuff and the previous stuff that Kelly Sue DeConnick wrote.
Yeah.
So switching gears just a little bit to You're the Worst.
Oh, sure.
The last thing we saw of Becca and Vernon, they were pregnant. I believe he was drunk, which is where they usually leave off. And she had a big cake that they were diving into alone. Is that the last we're going to see of Becca and Vernon? Like, do we know if you guys are going to be back?
Oh, yes. We are very much back in season three.
Oh, good.
And I think actually the first episode that we appear in might have just aired night before last.
Oh, I'm not caught up this week. Okay, good.
Oh, no. It's all good. Yeah. So you definitely see us. You definitely find out more about the baby to come. And if anybody who watches the show is caught up, you know that the third season picks up like 4 days after the last season ended. So I'm
right.
Still very pregnant. But that was something I didn't know. None of us knew like what the timeline was going to be for season three. So I think I had convinced myself that I would have already had the baby when we came back for season three. And then when I came in for my fitting for my first episode of season three, and they were like, let's get that pregnancy pad on you, I thought, oh, wonderful.
I feel for poor Becca, because she's a little vain maybe, but really all she wanted to have the husband and the kids and the house, and this, the people just keep screwing it up for her.
That's right. She's the hero of the show. She's the best character. She's got the biggest heart, the biggest soul. Oh, what an asshole she is. Yeah, that's a character that I could not love playing more. Just absolutely love playing her. People, you know, we get asked, I think, both on camera and in voiceover, do you what's up? Do you like playing the hero or the villain? And again, that's another one where it's like, don't make me choose. I mean, they're both wonderful and for very different reasons. And that's certainly true of playing Becca. It's like, I just am not that person in real life. And it is so fun to be that person on a show.
What is the vibe on the set of You're the Worst? Is there improv that goes on there, or is it all heavily scripted?
There's definitely improv. The writing is phenomenal. So we absolutely do, you know, the majority of it, certainly what's been written, because I wouldn't want to do a discredit to the phenomenal, phenomenal writing on the show.
Sure.
But there are definitely things, you know, and there are definitely situations, you know, we've gotten what we needed, and then Steven will let the scene breathe a little bit. So I think we're not changing out dialogue ever, but at the top of and at the end of scenes, you're definitely seeing improvised stuff as well. Not every time, obviously, but like, I just went in and did additional dialogue recording for something we shot for an upcoming episode. And there was a lot of kind of stuff in there that's happening as something else is happening. And they, you know, they wanted us to come in and record a bunch of just like improvised dialogue, which was really fun.
You're the Worst has some pretty out there stuff. For spoilers for season three, for anyone who's not caught up, there is, of course, that Lindsay stabs Paul.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We just talked about this on our podcast this week. And I was talking with my friend Les, and he's like, I was watching and I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a dream sequence. Was there?
Yeah.
Was there a moment when you got the scripts, or when you're filming and you're like, I can't believe we're doing this?
Yes, but again, coming from sketch comedy, I'm
sure.
So used to doing things. I mean, it's the same with Stand Against Evil. It's there's so many things that I have the total pleasure of doing that strain credulity and credibility that I love it. You know, I love those moments where you're like, God, this would never happen in real life. Thank God we get to do it.
Well, I think that's all I've got for you today. And I want to thank you for doing this interview with me.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Randy. Thank you so much.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.